I read all the best Bitcoin content out there so that you can listen. This is a Crypto Economy Quick Read with Guy Swan. What is up? I hope you guys had a great weekend. Welcome back to the Crypto Economy. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we are starting off the week with a shorter but really fun read, another one from our friends over at BitcoinMagazine.com, this one by Pascal Hughley, and this is a really fun one. It's called Bitcoin and the Primacy of the Digital World. If I still sound a little stopped up, forgive me, I'm recovering from a pretty serious fever and 3 or 4 days of feeling miserable. Outside of that, let's go ahead and jump into this piece and we'll talk about it a little bit afterward. Bitcoin and the Primacy of the Digital World. As a fervent Bitcoin enthusiast, I frequently come across the following objection. In contrast to physical analog things, Bitcoin and similar crypto assets are completely virtual and digital. As such, they are neither tangible nor graspable, and thus lack any real basis of value. Because of their digital nature, many people still object to Bitcoin, refuse to take it seriously, or consider it altogether too scary. Some even lump the crypto asset in with other eerie and unsavory developments in tech and the ongoing digital transformation. Be not afraid of the digital world. Among the greatest digital threats seems to be the phenomenon of deep fake media. This is a term that has been in common use since 2017 for the technology used to create deceptively authentic-looking images and videos. Many politicians, actors, and other celebrities have already fallen victim to this practice. Deepfake videos put words into their mouths that they never said or make them perform actions they never did. What is real and what is not? Some technophobes fear that because the capabilities of the digital world are increasingly blurring our notions of reality and what is artifice, political as well as societal life could become ever more confused and agitated. Democracy hinging on the fact that civil discourse and public debate happen among educated and enlightened citizens is very much in danger because the fake will become indistinguishable from the truth. With the reactionary mistrust of all things digital, Bitcoin is getting its share of blowback as well. If this sort of mistrust resonates with you, I'm here to tell you, some of these hazards associated with an increasingly digital world are certainly true, but Bitcoin is your ally, not your foe in this. When looking at Bitcoin, the juxtaposition of analog and digital might seem obvious at first glance. Dissecting it further, though, reveals some interesting twists. Although Bitcoin is virtual and non-corporeal, as a new manifestation of money, it has actually overcome many characteristics of what is typically associated with the digital realm. Bitcoin as an asset. Interestingly, Bitcoin as an asset does experience increasing marginal costs in production, a feature that can be seen in conjunction with gold, a tangible asset of the corporeal world. The more gold is produced, the more expensive it becomes. In the case of Bitcoin, the production of new units is algorithmically set to a maximum per block or time interval. In other words, no matter how hard one tries, one can never produce more Bitcoin within a period of approximately 10 minutes than the amount specified by the code. It is this digital scarcity imported via the real world that makes Bitcoin potentially valuable. The potentiality of value is being actualized as more people are persuaded of its absolute digital scarcity. Since any realized value is always the result of subjective value judgments by individuals. Bitcoin as a digital bearer instrument. Quote, A bearer instrument refers to an instrument that is payable to anyone possessing the instrument and is negotiable by transfer alone. End quote. Definition from uslegal.com. Bitcoin is not only digitally scarce, but by its very nature, is similar to a bearer instrument. Another feature where Bitcoin contradicts the usual notion of digital goods. Because Bitcoin resembles a bearer instrument, it can be held independently and apart from any third party. While holding Bitcoin does not give a Bitcoin holder any rights against any tangible issuer, possessing Bitcoin does indeed entitle a Bitcoin holder to have them spent univocally. That is, the Bitcoin protocol automatically and undeniably executes a Bitcoin transaction once initiated by the rightful owner. This goes to show that having Bitcoin is associated with some sort of underlying right against some sort of issuer, the Bitcoin protocol. Thus, the crypto asset has proved for the first time in history that bearer instruments no longer have to be printed on paper to have these characteristics. Bitcoin has solved the double spending problem and cannot be copied. It's the perfect combination of the advantages from the analog as well as the digital world. An idea whose time has come. Many still do not appreciate the ingenuity of this combination. However, it is important to recognize that it is based on a way of thinking that is increasingly losing its validity. For more and more people, the digital has become a matter that is taken for granted. While older generations may still make excursions into digital spheres as tourists of an analog world, Gen Z, millennials, and even the slightly older Gen Xers have long been at home in a digital world where bits dominate atoms. Having grown up mostly as digital natives, they've cultivated a digital lifestyle from the ground up. This gives them a completely different attitude toward the digital world than people who have been socialized knowing only the analog world. One of the most impressive examples of this development is the video game Fortnite. For so-called Google Kids, Fortnite is much more than a video game. It is the reality of their lives in which they socialize and spend more time than in the real world. February 2019 was the biggest moment in Fortnite's young history. The American electronic music producer DJ Marshmello gave an in-game concert. His performance took place completely virtually on a stage within the computer game. Fortnite players could participate only as their virtual avatars, and that's what they did. Almost 11 million, mostly young people, danced as their game characters in the digital concert. Such events may seem surreal and curious to older generations, but for these Google kids, they are completely normal. Similarly, V-Bucks, the currency within Fortnite, are valuable assets for them. From this famous in-game currency, it's only a small step to Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. This digital mindset also explains why some female millennials may be just as happy to receive a digital bouquet of flowers on their smartphones on Valentine's Day as they are to receive roses that have grown in the soil. Similarly, the day is soon approaching when digital gold will seem more real to this generation than physical precious metal. An exponential way of thinking. As a species, we are in the process of digitizing our reality. This is probably just another iteration, not the last, of a cultivation process that humanity has been going through since time immemorial. We learn to think in gradually more abstract categories and tap into new potentials again and again. The process of cultural adaptation to fully adopt digital values has only just begun. What makes it more difficult with Bitcoin adoption, however, is the fact that it is an exponential phenomenon. Our brains, on the other hand, are designed for linear interpolation. We instinctively understand that if we take 31-meter steps, we can travel 30 meters in total. If we could somehow not take linear, but exponential steps, the situation would be completely different. The same 30 steps, exponential in nature, translating to 2 to the 30th steps, would take us around the world 26 times, a fact that we can hardly picture rationally. Because our thinking is not one of an exponential mindset, exponential technologies have always overwhelmed us. One only needs to think of the internet or the smartphone. These technological advancements seemingly appeared all of a sudden, but shortly afterward, they had conquered the world. Bitcoin is now the next exponential technology to thrive on the back of these two and other exponential technologies. Just like the internet or the smartphone before it, the crypto asset is likely to produce second-round and third-round effects which will fundamentally change the world. With each passing day, it makes less and less sense to perceive the virtual and physical worlds as separate spheres of human action. Our reality is getting ever more digital, and with it, physical atoms might be more and more dominated by digital bits. If you're intimidated by this, this is totally fine. But let me reiterate what I said in the beginning. Because Bitcoin is a digital thing without the problems inherent to the digital world, it is your friend and not your foe. This is an op-ed by Pascal Hughley, author of the book Ignore at Your Own Risk, The New Decentralized World of Bitcoin and Blockchain. Views expressed are his own and do not necessarily reflect those of Bitcoin Magazine or BTC Incorporated. So that concludes Bitcoin and the Primacy of the Digital World by Pascal Hughley. And there's a lot of really fun ideas and concepts that he's brought up. And I love the clash between the digital and the analog, the real versus the virtual, in a sense, and the fact that we are figuring out how to merge the two. Where they were far more separate in the past, they are becoming one and the same. They are affecting each other. In fact, the digital world is becoming to dominate the information and the ideas that get implemented in the real world. So it's really interesting to see this unfold, and so quickly. Let's go ahead and hit our sponsor. I gotta get some water, and then we'll jump into Guy's take on a lot of these fun concepts. So this was a really good little piece on, thank you to Pascal Hughley for this, by the way. And but this was a really good one just on the nature of the digital. And there is really a huge disconnect that it has changed everything so quickly that Peter Schiff is the perfect example of it. Just don't understand how much value is there and see it as something that's purely artificial. And I don't mean it in the sense that it's created. Obviously, all the digital is created. It is quote-unquote artificial. But it is interacting and affecting the real world in a very profound way. And I think this is discounted just in the nature of humans. Like we get used to stuff incredibly quickly, and then it's just like, you know, part of our daily thing, and we don't realize that, you know, just 4 or 5 years ago, none of this social media stuff was what it is today, even close. And we're going through this massive, almost global identity crisis. Definitely many nations are going through a crazy identity crisis, having to come to terms with all these other ideas and ways of thinking that they have never been exposed to, and now this is the source of all evil because people disagree with me, and how dare they, et cetera, et cetera. But something being tangible doesn't mean it has value. And the kind of the boomer generation or older seems to have some sort of a problem with this idea that the digital cannot have value, that something that is digital can't have value. And in a sense, something that can't be scarce can't hold value. It can't it can't obtain a price. The equilibrium price of something that is infinitely abundant is always zero. So even things with like high utility or something that's incredibly useful, like a piece of software, is only valuable or only is enables the setting of a market price for it through artificial scarcity by hiding exactly the code that creates it, making it proprietary, and defending it as a company so that, you know, you only share that code explicitly with the people who come and pay for it. So it's an artificial scarcity. But that's no longer the case with Bitcoin. The scarcity is, scarcity can be a real thing in the digital world. And how this applies sort of, that's also why, like, the virtual is seen as fake. And then with the idea of something like the deep fakes and the, if you haven't watched like the videos on YouTube of putting one person's face on another, like while they're talking, like the facial recognition software that is out there now is unbelievable. And it can literally scan, it can watch and track facial features and expressions live and then graft a different face on top of it. Like, that is absolutely insane. That's a very, very crazy thing to be living in the world when that happens, when we've gone from literally in just 10 to 15 years from, okay, if you saw it, if you saw a video of it, well, then you know it's real, or you can at least trust it. And now we're immediately in this, almost seemingly in no time at all. Like, now everybody's got cameras everywhere. So it's like, oh, thank God we've got video of all this stuff. And now the video itself is entirely unreliable. We have no way to know whether or not the video is real. So what I think the effect of all of this is going to be, the fact that we're going increasingly digital, that the digital is increasingly less reliable as a source of truth. It can be so easily manipulated just live. While you're viewing it, you could be viewing an untruth, essentially. Is it, where I think this is going is that we're going to, the divides in culture, in the way we see things, in the information that we are accessing and learning and following, I think it will all decentralize in a very powerful way that will continue to break apart into more and more specific narratives. We will be less of these large kind of least common denominator collectives, and we will break apart into hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, who knows, of these sorts of different narratives. And we're already seeing this. We're already kind of seeing this as communities coming together around certain habits, around nutrition, differences in nutrition, and trying out all of these things. I think we've seen an explosion in variation of all sorts of different disciplines and ways of life and habits. And like I said, nutrition is a good example. You see all these like carnivore, keto, vegan, vegetarian, like there's just kind of been this spider web of like all these different paths, and everybody seems to be trying out hundreds of new things, and the market is responding a whole lot faster. And I think we're seeing the same thing in politics, that we're, the divides are growing. I think we're splitting off. People are organizing into smaller, more specific communities, more around what either interests them or what they specifically identify with. And a lot of these attempts of bringing it back together are really crumbling. And a good example is the news. And he brings this up in the article, is that this narrative is sort of framed that we're just not going to be able to tell what is truth anymore. And I think it's not exactly, I don't think it's that simple, that we're just not going to be able to tell what the truth is anymore. I think it's kind of the illusion that we knew what the truth was to begin with. I think it's more actually that what's occurring is that the monopoly on lies and incorrect information is breaking apart. But I don't think we ever really knew the truth. There was just such a disproportionate small set of individuals or institutions that had such a disproportional reach and capacity to either convince people or expose people to whatever information they thought or whatever information they wanted someone to think, whether it was purposefully a lie, which we saw on all the time. Government, it's like it, the government literally makes it their job to lie about everything. If you go back to every single war and just do a tiny amount of research, they're just lies on top of lies on top of lies. It's unbelievable. They'll even admit it. Nancy Pelosi not too long ago talked about, just in an interview with somebody, which is like, we knew there were no WMDs. I was the head of the Intelligence Committee or whatever. We were perfectly aware, but that was how we were going to get into the war. And then she says this for like a good 30 or 40 seconds. She goes on this thread about how, like, yeah, we knew we were lying to everybody. We knew it was all horseshit. And then suddenly starts to like backtrack, and she's like, "Oh God, what am I doing?" And tries to fix where she was going with that. But this is nothing. This is nothing new. This is the same story that has always been, and there's no exception to it. And I think we believe a ton of just incorrect and stupid crap because information spreads quickly, and information stories, you know, narratives about, you know, what is good or what is bad. Like, these things don't spread because they're right. They spread because they catch people's attention or they're provocative. Very rarely is the truth the most interesting story, but the most interesting story is the one that gets told. And I think there's a safe metric to just assume that 80% of what the general population believes is just wrong. Always. Always. And we'll never be able to catch up with what we technologically have available to us because the technology appears to move faster than we know how to properly utilize it and adjust to it. But humans are really adaptive. We do adjust to a lot. And the news, going back to will we be able to tell what the truth is anymore, I think our what we will see as trusted sources will be decentralized. That's what we're seeing. We're seeing people on Twitter and YouTube who are becoming influential enough that, like, guerrilla journalists that are just random nobodies that just decided that I'm just going to go to this rally and see what happens, and I'll report and give my experience here. I'm just going to read this whole document and explain what I saw read in this law, that they are saying this on the news, but this is actually what's the truth, what I'm reading. And there's been a huge explosion in alternative media. And I think the bulk of the spread of information is now happening on platforms like Twitter, platforms like Facebook. It's not the media anymore. That monolith, that consistent ideology, is really breaking apart. And I think with it, we're going to have a lot of strain on, I mean, we're seeing it. It couldn't be more obvious, really, but we're going to have tons of strain on our political institutions, on politics being really the key thing here, is that I don't think there's a way to put the cap back on the bottle here. Is like, Pandora's box is opened, and there's no going back. I think it will probably get uglier before it gets better, but I think it will most definitely get uglier before it gets better. But I think it's a transition that's inevitable, is that we're losing the cohesion that made our political story make sense to everyone. And there's no longer one trusted source of information. There's no longer one trusted narrative. There's no longer one trusted media. There's no longer one trusted source of education. I mean, anybody I think that has done any sort of extended learning after they got outside of school or learned how to do some research for themselves can easily look back and see what mountains of bullshit they were taught in public school. But now, literally, the whole system is obsolete. You can learn anything. I've done nothing but learn about Bitcoin. I've basically had a graduate's degree in what is Bitcoin and economics and money and all of this stuff is all for free. We have the greatest source, we have the greatest collection of information ever in the history of the world at our disposal. Like, not the Library of Alexandria could not hold a candle to the internet. And think about what we had, think about the alternative before we got here. Just go back to the 80s. If you wanted to learn how to do something, if you needed to figure out how to do something, you either A, asked somebody that you knew, or B, went to the public library. Or maybe it was in an encyclopedia. Instructions for stuff wouldn't be in an encyclopedia. I don't even know where you would find something. I guess you would keep the manuals for all of your devices, everything you purchased. Like, think about that. Like, that's crazy to think how far. I mean, I throw away every manual just because you can download a PDF version easily. But I'm not going to look up the manual. I'm going to look up a YouTube video of somebody doing exactly what I need to do and showing me how to do it. Like, that's how I've, I mean, I can change an alternator by myself and, you know, a belt, but sometimes I can't figure out where that last bolt is because it's down underneath the, you know, the water pump or something. I'm like, where the hell is this thing? And then I just look it up on YouTube and some guy's got a camera, going down underneath with a light shining. He's like, yeah, it's this crazy, awful bolt right here. And you're going to need this end on your wrench, and it's going to be a real pain in the butt, but this is how you get to it. And I've always got it. I can look up my exact car, my exact year, and almost always I can find exactly what I'm looking for. It doesn't cost me anything. I don't have to sign up on some new service or anything. I just search the endless, most complete, constantly evolving database of human knowledge in all of history. I have just a bar, and I can just type crap in by word, and it spits it out to me. That's unbelievably profound, and it makes very, very good sense that would throw a lot of shit that we are used to totally out of whack. But as this article points out, there is a truth problem in this. Anybody can post any information. So even though there is unbelievable wealth and value in this, and no matter what, even mixed in with all the lies or the fake information or just the plethora of flat-out mistakes and misunderstandings that are spread and copied and pasted everywhere, aside from all of that, clearly this thing is a shocking net positive in value, but it does mean that we have to figure out how to adjust. We have to figure out how to discern truth from lies or correct from incorrect. And we also need some source of totem in the digital world. And that is what Bitcoin does. Bitcoin is a source of truth. The mechanism itself, proof of work, enables Bitcoin to be a source of truth that has skin in the game. It's economically incentivized, it's game theoretically protected, and collectively validated. So that even though we have this bifurcation of all of our ideas, of our narratives, where we're suddenly having to come to terms with how different we all are, and we're getting to hear all of our stupid thoughts all at once, that when social scalability is breaking down, we explicitly need a tool that enables a broader social scalability, which is exactly what Bitcoin does. Rather than relying on some political narrative that is going to be flimsy, is going to be weak and fickle and break apart with the expansion of the internet and the expansion of ideas, rather than hinging on a narrative of what my community is, because our culture is changing, our ideas are changing, the way we live our lives are changing, what we eat is changing, everything is changing right now. So rather than holding on to all of these highly mobile ideas, we have a rock. We have something that is as objective as possible to lean on to bridge the gap between all of those places where trust is broken down. And I think this will lead to something. I think this will lead to Bitcoin being that totem in the digital world. Is that will be what allows everyone to continue to share their ideas, to share their products, and build a global frictionless market, or at least a much less frictioned market than what we are currently putting up with. And trust will break apart into much smaller communities. And I think part of our the way we will adjust to this, that we will adapt to this new reality, is probably that we will go back to the local, when we will go back to the real or the local when it comes to trusting what's happening around us or in our political world and in our local communities. I think we'll increasingly go to local, go to what we can trust and what we do know. And we'll also find ways to leverage new technologies, leverage hopefully public-private key cryptography to discern what is true, what is the person I'm talking to. Is this the same person I had the previous conversation with? I think we have the tools to adapt at our disposal, and we have this incredibly new innovation that throws such an interesting new twist into the entire game, Bitcoin. And I think we have all of the tools to adapt. It'll just be very interesting to see how and where everyone turns when they feel like the future is uncertain. And obviously we can see tons of bad and stupid that is resulting from that trend. But I think there's also a lot of good and very interesting and intelligent happening from that pressure. All right. The last thing I wanted to talk about was just the idea of a bearer instrument. So Bitcoin is kind of like a totem of truth here, but one of the most interesting things about it is it's as a bearer instrument, it is entirely independent. And that is one thing that is also going to be in how Bitcoin is going to change the game, is that it is going to be a profound teacher of responsibility. And I have learned that lesson all too well in my past. Bitcoin is absolutely unforgiving if you treat it irresponsibly, if you treat it negligently. There is a significant portion of modern society that has not had almost any lesson in personal responsibility. Some literally go cradle to grave, never knowing what it's like to be in charge of their own life. And that's unbelievably sad. They're always dependent on someone else, and that is getting worse. And I think that's an awful thing to do to humans, to take away that opportunity to learn something about yourself, to take charge of your life, to actually feel and know what it's like to be independent. I would never give it up for the world. Like somebody says, like, oh, wouldn't you just like to be a kid again and, you know, not have to make all these decisions or be in charge or anything? It's like, no, that'd be miserable. I don't want anybody to make my decisions. I'm the only one that I trust to make them. So, and Bitcoin is that. Bitcoin is a teacher where there is none. And Peter Schiff very recently lost his password or whatever the hell happened. But simple, obvious assumption is that he treated it negligently and or with very, very little care as to what it was or how he should protect it or why he should protect it, and lost it. Go figure. But guess what? In, you know, 3 or 4 years, when Bitcoin is massively more valuable than it is now, and he has to buy back in again to do something that is available to him, some service or application or something that is incredibly useful that connects him to a market that could never exist in any other sense or with any other technology, he won't make that mistake again. He will treat it very carefully, and he will actually care where he puts it and that he makes a backup of it, knowing that it could just disappear one day. All right. Anyway, I'm out of time. This is just my thoughts. Got my brain rolling after I read this article. Really great article. Another thank you to the author, Pascal Hughley, and of course, Bitcoin Magazine for all the amazing stuff that they publish. I've actually got another couple of pieces from Bitcoin Magazine that I've got in the works. I just wanted to hit this one first before we got to them. And got some really fun stuff coming for the rest of the week. So I hope you guys have had a wonderful day, and I hope you enjoyed today's quick read. And don't forget to follow the author on Twitter. That tag is PAHUEG. I will link to him in the Twitter post as well as the show notes. And of course, Bitcoin Magazine. I can't imagine any of you are not following Bitcoin Magazine, but if you are, double check. Twitter unfollows people on occasion, and you never know. So double check. Make sure you're following Bitcoin Magazine too. And of course, make sure you are following me, Guy Swan, at The Crypto Economy on Twitter. And you can find me at thecryptoeconomy.com, where I've got I've got over 400 episodes now. I don't remember the exact number, but episodes of this show, somewhere I'm like at 342 quick reads now, and numerous full books, basically. And just so much on everything that you could think about Bitcoin, cryptography, economics, the technology in this space, Lightning Network, everything. So if you want to go exploring and check out the many, many other authors we have covered and the huge selection of works that we have in audio for you to dig into, you can check all that out at thecryptoeconomy.com. And lastly, I just want to give a shout out to my patrons and all of you guys in the Crypto Economy Telegram crew. Thank you guys so much for all your contributions. It has been awesome, and I love that chat. I love coming back and seeing a whole bunch of updates that I have to keep up with, and y'all just have the most ridiculous conversation, or it's just profound. Some really interesting stuff. Steve had some really good pushback on one of the articles we read, which led into a really fun discussion, I thought. So a huge thank you to all you guys for contributing to the show and supporting my work and, turning all this into audio to make it available for as many people as possible. And lastly, a shout out to the Let's Talk Bitcoin Network. I think this will be published up there, if I'm not mistaken. So thank you to those guys for sharing out this work and the Bitcoin Magazine stuff and making all of this available. Bitcoin Magazine is an unbelievable resource, and Let's Talk Bitcoin Network has some of the best shows in the entire space, and it's really an honor to be a part of that crew. So thank you all so much. If you would like to support the show, you can also become a patron at patreon.com/thecryptoeconomy, and you will get access to the Crypto Economy crew Telegram chat as well, so you can join in with all those crazy fools over in the Crypto Economy crew. So I will catch you all back here tomorrow with another episode of the Crypto Economy with Guy Swan. And until then, take it easy, guys.